And welcome to Hidden Behind the Music Stand. I'm your host, Patty Ryan, and with me is Michelle Black, who is a section first violinist of the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, and we'll be talking about her admiration for Taylor Swift and her music. Welcome, Michelle. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey!
So we go way back. I would consider you one of my, like, closest friends. And
me too.
Oh, thank you. And we actually first met because we were put in a string quartet together in undergrad at USC. And it was, like, this funny quartet with you and me, past guest Alejandro Duque, and violinist Kyla Moffitt. And I don't know, I guess for me, it was kind of my first string quartet-ish experience that was relatively more serious because it was in a university setting. So I felt like the four of us got to know each other on a really more intimate level than we would have if we were just normal colleagues in college.
Yes, very intimate. Do you remember our first rehearsal? Our meet and greet?
I kind of do.
Our quartet?
Yeah, I remember feeling bombarded. I
don't know. Like, you looked so put off by all of us. You're like, why am I here?
Well, it was just like, I think I was just overwhelmed with meeting people. I was much shyer back then, so it was a little bit overwhelming to be like, oh my god, there's people I don't know. How do I talk to them? And so all the social anxiety crept in, so maybe it showed on the outside too.
Yes, we're a very overwhelming bunch.
No, you're not. That's the
no?
thing. That's
okay.
Funny. So, Michelle, what's your most insane performance story?
Oh, so freshman year at USC, got an email to play the soundtrack part for some movie. And I was like, ooh, money. Yeah, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. So we went in and we played Beethoven Eroica. So I hacked my way through that with a bunch of other colleagues and students from elsewhere in the LA area. So that was like November. And then in April, they were like, oh, so we're going to use that recording in a movie. Do you want to be in that too? Mm. Not just me, a bunch of us. So I was like, yeah, honey. So I did that, and that was really cool because we played with Jamie Foxx in the movie was The Soloist. We weren't allowed to approach him though, which was kind of unfortunate, and so I just kind of like creepily stared at him from afar.
I was like, oh my gosh. How did they make sure that no one approached him? I guess there must have been some other bodyguard or something. Like, what was the...
Oh, he was still like talking to people. I think that we just couldn't go up to him, but he would go up to us and like start conversation.
I see.
I just was never part of the group.
I see. Okay.
The one time he was talking to people.
Uh-huh.
But I think he was pretty friendly.
Yeah. I've only, I think, ever heard that he's like a really nice person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And I didn't talk to him. He seemed nice.
And this
from
was
a distance.
So this was like, I think, a 2000, gosh, what year would that have been? 7 or 8 film?
Yeah, 2008.
Yeah, and I think the story is based on a true story of
Nathaniel Ayers, I believe, was a cellist who had some kind of mental illness and...
Schizophrenia, I think, was what they did. Yeah, or something like that.
I should know more about the movie I was starring in. Just kidding. Yeah, it's about him, and he went to Juilliard, and then I think he became homeless at one point just because of his mental illness, and then
it's sort of like a redemption story.
Help since.
Yeah. I haven't actually watched the movie. I probably should because I know so many people in the orchestra that were filmed like yourself.
I also auditioned for a role in the part because they wanted an Asian girl who was part of a quartet that Nathaniel Ayers / Jamie Foxx was in, but I guess the only auditions I had ever taken before were on violin, and I'd never done like a speaking role thing, and I think there were two lines that I had to learn, but I thought it was a good idea at the time, I guess, that I didn't need to practice that, so I walked in. I had one of my roommates drive me. We're at like Paramount Studios or something, and we walk into the room, and I'm like, hello. They're like, okay, we're gonna have you record these two lines. So I was standing there, and they had a camera filming me, and I think the girl read her line, and then I had a line that I was supposed to like recite back to her, and I could not stop laughing.
Of course,
I was really nervous, and I was so uncomfortable that I was laughing. And they were like, okay, I don't think this is gonna work. I was like, no, let me try again. I got it. And so they're like, okay, fine. You really didn't want to give me a second chance, and I started laughing again.
Of course,
I didn't get the part.
No. Do you know who did? Is it someone we know?
I think it was some girl who was at Colburn.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
But I don't remember.
Apparently she didn't laugh through the part.
No, but they didn't even include that scene.
Oh, really?
In the movie. Yeah, it's not in the movie.
Oh, funny. Okay.
I guess musicians just aren't meant to be actors.
Or we just weren't trained to be actors in addition to... I mean, we're actors in a certain other way. Like, just not speaking, necessarily.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's always fun to hear those kinds of Hollywood stories, especially when we go to school in Los Angeles. There's, like, a lot of opportunities to either, like, meet or let's run into celebrities or be a part of a huge movie production. So that's, like, kind of a unique experience.
It was fun.
Yeah. All right. Can you tell me about your really adorable fur baby, Kenji?
Oh, Kenji? He's almost 8. He's a Cocker Spaniel Poodle Lab Chow American Eskimo dog mix.
Holy, I didn't realize that was as much as what he was.
Yeah, I got him because I thought he was part Aussie, but he's not.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, 0% Australian Shepherd.
Oh, but he's so cute. And he's like as smart as a Aussie.
He's pretty smart.
Yeah, I mean, Kenji is like one of the cutest dogs I think I've ever seen. Like, even when, I remember when you first adopted him in Houston. I mean, I love dogs and I love all animals, but like specifically, I was just like, I can't get over how cute and attractive this dog is.
He's pretty attractive.
Yeah. And I guess I just wanted to point that out, but also like, did you want to share a little bit of his adoption story?
Oh, sure. It was my first time at a shelter. My friend Annie Chen was like, I found the perfect dog for you at the shelter, because she would just randomly go and play with the dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, they need love.
Yeah.
So she found this dog there and she showed me a picture. So I was intrigued. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
So we went and we went to the female side and I was like, this is not the dog you showed me in the pictures.
But it was. I was just stupid.
But the dog was gone. Her name was Pepper.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't Kenji.
So, okay. No, it wasn't. So we went to the male side and he was there and he had heartworms. And he was surrendered because he would chase the farm animals.
Oh.
He's a farm dog.
Gotcha. Before.
So I was like, well, let's take him into the little room so we can meet each other. And he was not interested in me at all.
Oh.
And then I was like crying because it was so sad. Not because he wasn't interested in me, but because all the dogs were so sad.
Yeah.
So it's between him and this three-legged black dog. Then I took him. Well, actually, I was like, okay, I'm gonna go home and sleep on it, because it's kind of a big decision to make.
Yeah, you're
so
taking
I went home, slept on it, and then I had a concert with Houston Symphony the next day in the afternoon. So then I asked my boyfriend at the time if he could call the SPCA, the shelter, and see if his name was Chuchi at the shelter. Horrible name. So I was like, can you see if Chuchi is still there? This is his, like, ID number. Mm-hmm. So he's like, oh, yeah, I just called him. Unfortunately, he's not there anymore. And I was like, I don't believe you, because you're a liar.
Uh-huh.
You lie about everything. So then I called the shelter, and I was like, hello, do you have this dog? And they're like, let me see real quick. He was there.
Yeah.
So it's like, did you not call? Or did you just, did he not think I was fit to mother a dog?
Or like, you know, that you were dumb enough not to check yourself.
I was busy. To play a concert.
Yeah.
I think I called him at like intermission or something.
Right.
So I called him back and I was like, okay, well, they have him actually, so I don't know what you were talking about.
Yeah.
But he's there, so I'm gonna go after the concert with Annie and go get him.
Uh-huh.
It's fine. It's fine. But I have a wonderful dog now.
Yeah. Clearly, you're an amazing dog mom, and Kenji is lucky to have you as his guardian. We all love Kenji. Are you ready for some Spitfire questions?
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Okay. Mahler or Bruckner?
Mahler.
Debussy or Ravel?
I don't know who Debussy is. I'm just kidding.
I know. That's
what like. They're basically the same. Either.
Okay. All right. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Appetizer or dessert?
Oh. Hi, dessert.
Okay. Sparkling.
That wasn't very rapid. Sparkling.
Okay.
You know water?
Yeah.
Was this water? Okay.
Fan favorite question, alternate universe musical instrument.
What? Probably like cello.
Early bird or night owl?
Night. Although, I really do love a sunrise.
Hmm.
But I also do really love a sunset.
Oh, okay. So if you wake up night early, owl. You get both.
Yeah, take a nap. from 3 to 8 in the afternoon.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wait. Then I think
you missed the sunset. I mean, it depends, unless you're like in June or something in the solstice.
That's true.
Anyway. Pandemic guilty pleasure?
Eating, probably. Yeah. But that's just an always guilty pleasure.
Okay.
Thrifting?
Sure.
I've been thrifting like throughout the whole pandemic. So I was like, well, I still want to shop, but I'm on a budget now.
Yeah. Are there any resources or like websites that you went to specifically? Apps?
Google Maps?
Okay, so you went in person. You would go to, I remember,
oh, yeah,
you'd go to like Goodwill and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Just wherever
Google Maps.
That's my resource.
I mean, that's a good place to start.
Yeah. I really don't like online shopping.
Okay.
I mean, I do. I like browsing and putting things in my cart and then never buying them.
Right.
But for actually buying things,
you need to go in person.
I'd rather try it on.
Yeah, I agree. Most inspired musical hero of any genre?
We'd probably have to go with Taylor Swift.
I figured. Yeah. We'll talk more about her later. Most transformative performance experience?
How about when we played Smitten's From My Lies?
No.
It was life-changing when Alejandro had his solo.
I can just, no, you know, the funny thing is, like, I can only imagine, like, his eye roll, his ginormous eye roll, like, oh my god, like, after hearing that.
Like, why?
Well, actually, this did spark a memory, which also actually came up on Facebook recently of, like, I don't know, was it, I can't remember the number of years ago, but it was the memory of us pranking Alejandro in your car.
Oh, yeah. Did we pick up him from the airport?
Yeah, yeah.
And you were hiding in the trunk?
That's right, of your car.
That is so dangerous.
Oh, I know. I don't think I was in the trunk the entire ride to the airport. And it was to Javi, oh. It wasn't to Bush.
Bush?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you got back there. We probably, like, pulled into the cell phone lot.
Yeah, and then I think I, like, crept in. Yeah.
Then you were in there for, like, 20 minutes before popping out.
Yeah. And there was, like, a code word or code statement that you gave that was, like, I can't remember what it was, but it was something to do with, like, where should we eat? Where should we get some food?
Oh, yeah.
And then you, like, because I wasn't sure if that was really, like, the code. I don't know. I, like, panicked in the moment. And then you're, like, well, actually, yeah, like, where should we get food? And then I was, like, whoa! And Alejandro's, like, oh, my God! Anyway, that was just such a funny memory. A desert island piece of any genre?
Probably Bolero.
Bolero. I mean, just your deadpan delivery is always just so amazing. So, like, that's clearly a joke, right? Just for people to know.
I love Bolero.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I guess.
So, then between...
It's Ravel.
I was gonna say...
I mean, Debussy wrote Bolero, right?
They're about the same, right? Yeah, so for people who, a lot of people probably know the piece, Bolero by Ravel. It was made kind of more famous in the Winter Olympics ice skating routine in like the 80s. I can't remember which one. But it's a highly repetitive, it was meant to be an etude for the orchestra by Ravel. And it's highly repetitive. And the violin string parts, I've played it, like it's pretty monotonous. So...
Yeah.
Until the end. But, you know, some people like the piece. I don't know.
I did play that with a community orchestra not terribly long ago, and it was a little rough. The solo instruments
couldn't quite
make it all the way through their solos.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, it was kind of sad.
Yeah. And that's like...
And then we played Hindemith Symphonic Metamorphosis.
Oh, wow. That's actually tricky. Kind of tricky.
Yeah. So imagine how that went. We couldn't even get through Polaris.
That's the fair point. Well, at least they're trying, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the love for music.
Okay.
Maybe you should cut all of that out.
All right. Well, you somehow made it through the Spitfire questions.
Woo!
Congrats.
My armpits are so sweaty.
Ew.
Woohoo! Now a harmonica.
Oh, you want the harmonica now? Okay, this is our USC harmonica.
That was beautiful. Now slide it all over your lips. That sounds bad. Nice.
All right, Michelle, can you walk me through your musical origin story? We're just going to be laughing through this entire recording. How did you discover music? When did you decide, hey, like, you know, I like playing violin. I might as well try this thing professionally. And then all the steps to where you are today.
Well, that probably didn't happen until I was in my master's. Mm-hmm. Like, the thought never occurred to me that maybe I should take an orchestra audition until I had transferred from Cleveland to Rice for my master's.
Well, that makes sense. Like, yeah. I mean, you went from a pretty heavy... Well, I guess Cleveland Institute of Music is a pretty... Well, at the time, I think it was a very chamber music heavy school, but also, I think, a pretty heavy orchestra school at the same time, right? No?
Mostly chamber.
Oh, really? Mostly chamber? Okay. I just think of the Cleveland Orchestra in your backyard.
Oh, yeah. Cleveland Orchestra's great.
But I guess in comparison to Rice, Rice is a huge orchestral program school, huge emphasis on that, mm-hmm. with some chamber music.
I feel like that's, besides, like, private lessons, Rice is... 4K is the orchestral program.
Yeah. Not to say, I don't want to dismiss, though, that there are so many great chamber music opportunities at Rice as well. And I went down that side of the school. But yeah, it's very much set up in a way that is beneficial for people who are trying to audition and win orchestral auditions. But so that's when you decided to actually start thinking about music more in a career sense, was your transition to master's?
I mean, with violin, I always wanted to in an orchestra.
Okay.
I never really enjoyed chamber music.
Yeah.
But I just never thought maybe I should take an audition until I was at Rice.
I see. Well, how did you even find the violin to begin with? Let's backtrack.
My mom is a piano teacher, and so I started music with her. But even before I started playing piano, I would always hear her students because they would come to our house and have their lessons there. So I'd always hear them playing their exercises and pieces and stuff. Mostly young students. So whatever they did is what I ended up doing.
I see.
So I started piano with my mom, and then she somehow found out that I wasn't reading the music and I was just doing everything by ear because I had learned it all from hearing her students over the years.
Do you know if that connect? Because I know you have perfect pitch too. Did that?
I don't know if it's
from that. Connecting. Okay.
I don't know. So she was like, I make you start over. And so I was like,
that sucks.
No.
Yeah. But I mean,
then I did anyway.
Yeah. I mean, because you have to learn musical notation to do anything further than.
Right.
Yeah.
So she made me start over from like the first exercise book. And then I don't know. I think it was just kind of pointless because at that point, I already knew it from hearing her students. And then I also knew it from when I played it before. So I was like, this is dumb. So I quit.
Okay.
And then I guess she didn't want me to quit music. So she was like, you want to play the violin? I was like, no. And she was like, are you sure? It'll be really fun. You can go to like group class. I don't know why that would be appealing. It was fine. So I was like, okay, fine. Leave me alone. I'll do violin.
Uh-huh.
So that's how I began.
Okay.
At least that's my memory of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Around what age was that?
I was 6.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's kind of typical of when to start an instrument of that. Yeah. What made you stick through with the violin?
I hate quitting things.
Oh, okay.
So at one point I was doing ballet, violin, and also this like Bible study thing every Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And so it's, well, my sister, me, and my younger brother. Mm-hmm. I think my mom was like, I can't take all three of you to all your extracurricular activities, so you're gonna have to quit something. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I'll quit Bible study. Then she was like, okay. So I quit that, and then it was down to ballet and violin, and then she was like, you're gonna have to give up something else. Uh-huh. I was like, okay, I'll give up ballet. So violin was the only thing I wasn't willing to quit, probably because I put in so much work.
Okay.
And I was like, I can't quit this. I've already invested too much.
I see. It's not because you preferred one over the other. It was just the time commitment. Had you started ballet earlier, maybe you would have chosen ballet.
I'm pretty sure I did start ballet.
Oh, earlier. Well then I'm confused.
But like, I didn't practice my ballet steps at home.
Okay, I see.
Whereas with violin, I would have to practice at home.
Gotcha.
Well, I guess I didn't have to, but I did.
Yeah. So then you kept going in music study and graduated from high school. But like, why did you go to USC?
Oh.
And why did you decide?
That's a whole other story.
Well, why did you decide the music, a music degree?
So I started violin I was six. My sister wanted to play a stringed instrument. She started in, I think she was in fifth grade. But my mom was like, I can't play violin because I don't want you guys to be competing with each other. Mm-hmm. So she chose viola. Mm-hmm. I basically just did everything she did.
Okay. She's older.
Even. Yeah. She's a grade older. Mm-hmm. So when it came to picking out classes, if she took French, I was like, all right, I guess I'm taking French next year because I just can't make decisions for myself, I guess. So she went to music school. I guess that's why I went to music school.
Got it. Okay.
I mean, I did enjoy it. It's not like I did it only because she did it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I guess that's my path.
No, I get that. I mean, I'm a younger sister too. So like there's something about like seeing your older sister do something and then like saying, well, it can be done. So I guess I got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess I'm trying to figure out like the moment that you started to be more independent from what template your sister was doing. Was that at USC or was that when you went to CIM? And also the other thing is that like you clearly must have been also receiving praise for the work you were doing in music. It wasn't so much just about like what your sister was doing. Like you must also have been supported by your teachers or audiences,
I mean,
family.
I did youth orchestra and I feel like just generally speaking, not just youth orchestra, but like, it was probably the thing I was the best at.
Yeah.
Like academics were not my thing, but I could play violin.
Right.
So I was like, well, I guess it's the only thing I'm kind of good at right now. So
yeah.
I'm going to do that.
I guess that goes in line with when you started to think a little bit more independent as well. Like, you did have that a little bit of that self-reflection of, like, I guess I'm pretty good at this. This is the best thing I can do currently, so I might as well. Like, yeah, my sister's doing it too, but yeah. Because, I mean, your sister's gone off to do more of the period performance route, and you clearly went into the orchestral route, which, again, probably stemmed from your...
Very different.
Yeah, different paths. So, after Rice, I'm skipping ahead because we kind of did a little bit of a... You went to CIM, then Rice... And you graduated, and I know, I'll just fill in the blank here, that you were doing some sub work. You were a sub violinist with the Houston Symphony for a bit of time, which I was grateful for because as I was doing my degree at Rice, you were still in Houston despite being a graduate. So we got to hang out again like we were, you know, an undergrad. And then I remember when you won your job at Indianapolis. What was that like?
I definitely wasn't expecting it. I was in denial. I was like, oh my gosh, they messed up. I'm not going to say anything.
Okay, but like clearly you also deservedly won the job. You just felt like because it's so hard to win a job that it must have been a mistake, right?
Yeah. And then I was sitting with, we weren't friends yet, but Sophia Cho was sitting next to me because we were in the same studio with Paul Cantor. And I was like, I don't know what I was doing. I think I was like nervous. So I was nervous talking and I was like, we're going to get this job and we're going to move here. And she was like, not jinx it. Except she didn't tell me this till later, and then it happened, and I was like,
wait, what? Yeah, you
what the
you
heck?
Put it out into the universe, and the universe rewarded you for it. That's really funny.
I mean, I wish I could do that again.
Right, I know, right? How, if that... Yeah, that's like such a cool moment to experience, especially with the person that like you were auditioning with and then are now like close friends with too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Grateful she's here too.
Mm-hmm. And so you've been in the symphony for like 4 or 5 years? How many years now?
I joined in 2017.
Yeah.
In the fall.
Yeah. So it was also kind of funny because I feel like a lot of times our lives parallel. And so when I was transitioning and moving to the Twin Cities with my job, you were doing the same. And we were talking about what we are doing to move, etc. Well, are you ready to take a break?
Yeah.
Okay.
So are you ready to take a break?
Oh, you're asking me? Sure, I'll take a break. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
We'll be right back. Welcome back from the break. So, I think for most people who know you specifically very well, Sushi, they know that you are a huge fan of Taylor Swift. And honestly, it's because of you and other outside reasons that I also became a huge fan of Taylor Swift myself. So I've been kind of looking forward to having you on the podcast to talk about her because I feel like in some ways, yes, she's like a huge star. Like, why does she need more attention? You know, she's clearly has a career set for the rest of her life. But I think a lot of times people don't quite understand her and they perceive her as a way of this kind of Hollywood-esque, maybe an image of her when she was even younger, or who knows. Mm-hmm. And maybe they just don't like her music for some reason, which is also fine. I wouldn't say that she's like the best vocalist, you know, that kind of thing.
I think she's improved a lot since she was 14.
Oh, for sure. Well, that too.
I mean, let's hope. Yeah. But also, I feel like her main thing is her storytelling in
right.
her songs.
And I think that's where a lot of people miss the mark with her, I think. Or when they don't understand her, mm-hmm. they don't actually listen to her lyrics. So I guess we're diving in. I was going to do some other background. The reason I fell in love with her was that she is able to express in her own poetry very intimate feelings that I have never been able to put into words myself. I quote her mm-hmm. lyrics all the time as representative of like how I'm feeling in the moment, or like songs all the time. I'll say like, this is what I'm feeling about this situation in this beautiful 3-minute segment.
I am a crumpled up piece of paper lying on the floor.
Well, I mean, but that is an actual lyric. She, you know, right? In her song All Too Well is, I think, in the bridge of that or whatever. But
yeah, she's a better singer than me, though. Who's really trying there.
So yeah, so I just expressed why I am in admiration of her as well. What about, I mean, I know you mentioned her storytelling. What's your perspective on her?
Well, I feel like I grew up listening to her.
Uh-huh.
So when her first CD came out, when we were 14.
Yeah, because we're the same age as her. Yeah, which is fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is fun. 1989, uh-huh. baby. Yeah, so I guess I was in high school and I would hear her songs and I'd probably be like crying to them mm-hmm. at home. Mm-hmm. And I guess I kind of just kept listening to her albums as they came out.
Did you feel like when you listened to her debut album, Taylor Swift, that you were going through some of those same feelings and emotions in your high school experience?
Yeah, because we were the same age. I feel like we were, I mean, besides the fact that she had a completely different life and lifestyle, right. I feel like you kind of go through the same things at the same age.
Well,
does
yeah, I was
sense?
Going to say that. And I was also going to say, in my experience, though, like the album Red came to me when I like went through this horrible breakup, and that was only a few years ago, you know, but that album came out in what?
I actually didn't know Red was an album until I was in indie. Oh. I thought it was just a song.
Oh.
And then I felt so stupid, but then I was also like,
but it is a song.
It is a song. But it's also an album. I don't even know if I knew All Too Well.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so I know. Okay. Fake fan.
I'm just looking up when that album came out. So not her re-released album. So this is a whole other thing with, I think if people do or don't know about Taylor Swift, is that a few years ago, maybe you should tell the story as I'm looking it up.
Oh, her record label basically sold her masters to someone who really didn't like Taylor and didn't even give her the opportunity to buy her own masters, which she wanted to. So basically she doesn't own her masters.
Right.
So as kind of a revenge, better than revenge, she is re-recording all her albums because now she can
right.
own them.
I mean, talk about ugliness in the music industry, first of all. Second of all, her rising above. That's another element of, I think, about her that I admire, is that like, yeah, like a lot of times maybe her lyrics are sometimes snarky or a little bit, you know, has a little bit of that spite. But mm-hmm. I also think that she always ends up rising above whatever is going on. I mean, so many songs about her haters, like, you need to calm down, shake it off. It's always something about how, like, well, whatever, I'm gonna do what's best for, yeah.
Yeah.
So I did do the research, and her original Red album came out in 2012. So, like, for me, it struck a chord in probably 2019. So, I mean, years later, I, like, went back to that album. I was like, oh my god, this is, like, exactly what I need right now, and this is exactly how I'm feeling.
So good.
Yeah, I mean,
you should all check out her 10-minute version of
Oh,
All Too
absolutely.
Well.
Yeah, I mean, it flies by almost. It's not even, it feels like it's not even 10 minutes long.
Yeah, it's just like she's telling you a story that you can listen to 100 times.
Well, and also, I mean, All Too Well is probably my favorite song of hers for that very reason of the storytelling mm-hmm. aspect of it. And this was even before her Taylor's version came out, which all her new albums are mm-hmm. now called Taylor's version that she's releasing. Mm-hmm. But that particular song for me is my favorite because it's so specific to a feeling and emotion of a breakup, like, let's be real, mm-hmm. but in a way that, yeah, just no other song has gotten me to that level. And I think it's also one of her most popular songs. songs, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I would say it is. I think it was really hard for her to perform that at first, but then after all the fans loved it, they changed it for her. I mean, we changed
it. That's what she always says too, right? Yeah.
That's what she says.
And I believe that's, I mean, I think it's famously known that that was the breakup between her and Jake Gyllenhaal or something like that too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in that same vein, I was going to ask you, what's your favorite song and why?
Ever or on that album? Well, I like that one, but I also like, oh man, we can't do this. We have to go by album.
Sure. We're going to do this. Go for it.
Oh, why can't I do that? They're all so good. Let me look. Okay. We'll start from the beginning. So on Taylor Swift, Cold As He was great. And then her next album, I think, is Speak Now. Oh, Dear John. That's a good one. Oh, but so is Last Kiss. Okay. It's okay. Let's move on. Red, it's got to be either All Too Well, The Last Time's really good, or the bonus songs, The Moment I Knew. And then there's 1989, which that's a fun album. I don't know. We'll skip that. and then there's Reputation, probably Getaway Car's great. I also like Gorgeous. Oh, shoot. I forgot Fearless. Fearless is great. You're Not Sorry is a great song on that. And there's Lover,
which I feel like, unfortunately, was kind of went under the radar because of the pandemic. That was an album that came out in 2019. And I think she was probably going to do a tour with Lover, right? I think that was...
She was going to do her own, like, music festival. Oh, okay. Which would have been so
But fun. I do think that that was an underrated, kind of unseen, went through the cracks album.
Yeah. Cornelia Street is really good on that one. And then there's her Folklore, which...
I know. So, like, so there's, like, these two double albums that came out during the pandemic called Folklore and Evermore. And... Man, they're like, I think if anyone is ever skeptical or thinks that Taylor Swift isn't a great songwriter, I would say, okay, well, check out Folklore, because if you didn't like her musical styles in the past, I think like that would be a great opening. Plus her, yes, she was an incredibly talented songwriter back when she was 14, but the maturity of her lyrics now, I find, are just elevated. I don't know about if you feel the same way.
Oh, yeah. Her way with words has gone so much better.
And the craftsmanship behind picking which words to use as well. I'll say one of my favorite songs on that is Mirrorball, actually, on the Folklore album. Just such a metaphor for celebrity. And also, I resonate with that because I feel like sometimes as a performer, I'm trying to cast this reflection of either life itself or also I'm trying to be the light in the room. Yeah, it's just very relatable. Yeah, and I think since the end of Evermore, or when that was released in late 2020, she's just been now re-recording all her stuff. So anyway, so she hasn't produced any necessarily like brand new material or a brand new album. She's done some bonus tracks and stuff, but yeah. So I guess when you're listing off all those songs, I was trying to string along kind of a general theme of like what you pick out from her lyrics or what you pick out from her songs.
Oh, I like this.
Yeah. Or you like the ones that are like, you know, you should have gotten your justice, but you didn't get your justice. Yeah.
Kind of like a screw you.
Yeah. And that's like a little bit of like that peppered of like spite, but I can see how like that can be incredibly cathartic to listen to based on things that are out of your control, right? Like, I think that's the other thing about her lyrics is that, yeah, it's feeling like you're being heard in a moment when you can't find the words for yourself.
And it's nice to know that you're not the only one who's gone through whatever it is that you're going through.
Totally.
I feel like her songs are relatable.
And I think also what I admire is that she's, as I slightly mentioned already, she's constantly trying to change her sound. She's not just a country singer. I mean, she started that way, right? And I know that that's where a lot of her songwriting comes from, is that storytelling from country music. So like Taylor Swift, the debut album was definitely more of the country. Then Fearless was a little bit more pop. Then Speak Now, even more pop. Then Red, I'm not sure. What would you call Red? Maybe?
I think a little bit more acoustic.
And then No, 1989. That was like dance pop almost. And then Reputation was almost R&B.
I don't know. I just kind of thought it was really angsty. But I guess if you're trying to like categorize it, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I just hear a lot more of like that kind of backbeat, a little bit more. I mean, some electronics, of course, but like just something a little bit more like sitting on the back of things than upbeat. And then Lover being a return to pop, I suppose. And then Folklore and Evermore just like almost indie. Anyway, I guess I'm just trying to like, I guess a lot of it I did say was pop, but pop is a very huge umbrella of it. And there's just, I just admire her for trying new things. Always.
And she's so good at
it. She makes it work with her lyrics, I think is where I'm going at. Like, I think a lot of times people listen to the music first and then say, oh, the lyrics are great. But it's like, if you reverse that, like the music enhances the lyrics is like her perspective.
Mm-hmm. And I think she's a super hard worker. I mean, I think she's naturally talented, but I also think she works really hard and she just wants to make her fans happy too.
So can you tell me some experiences of you being a fan of Taylor Swift?
Ooh, yeah. So I got to go to her concert in Nashville, her Reputation tour. And that was really fun. I went with Sophia. And then she got us tickets to go to her concert in Indy. And so I was like,
for the Reputation tour?
Yeah. So I had already seen it once, but you know, it would have been fun to see it again. But that night we had the Indianapolis violin competition. I think it was the final.
Which is like one of the biggest violin competitions in the world. Yeah. And I think, isn't that where Augustin Hadalik, I think he first won Indy or something like that before becoming this massive star.
Yeah, a lot of people go through that competition. So I tried talking to the personnel manager and being like, oh, is there any way I can get out of this? My good friend is playing a concert that night. And I really
my good friend
and he was like no I mean he didn't
who
know
your good friend was
what I was trying to do, so I had to play that concert begrudgingly. I mean, the violinists were really great, fantastic players. I just really wanted to go see Taylor again. So then I made my boyfriend drive me right after the concert finished, because he got out early, to her venue, which I probably could have like gone to. It was also downtown. And I had my ticket and I was like, I would like to go to this concert. And they were like, the concert's over. I was like, no, it's not. Well, because Sophia was there and she was like, she's doing her third to last song or something. Yeah. I don't know. Because we had already gone. So she knew the set list. And I was like, no, they're still playing. They didn't like check my bag.
Oh, wow. Anything. They just let you in?
It's kind of sketchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I like got in and then I don't even think I had a wristband.
Oh, because on that tour, she was giving people wristbands, right?
Yeah. But they were like closing down the whatever things outside. So then I got in and then I was like, I think I was supposed to be on the ground floor, but like I didn't have the wristband. Also, there was like a bracelet thing you were supposed to have if you have access down there. They didn't give me one because I got there like super late. So I asked one of the security people, I was like, what do I do? How do I get down there? I don't have the bracelet. And he was like, just, you know, act really confident and you belong there. I was like, okay.
I mean, that's pretty good life advice sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it kind of worked because then, like, once I went down all the stairs, I was just like, I'm supposed to be here. Okay? I think I even showed the guy my ticket, but like, he was probably like, how do I know that's yours? And I was like, I know I'm late. I just got here. I'm in a bad mood. Like, just let me go. I don't know why he just let me
probably because he was scared.
He's probably like, I don't want to deal with her. I somehow made it all the way to the front because everyone was like crowding the aisles anyway at that point. She was doing her last song. And so I was probably like 15, 20 feet away from her. I was like, this is so amazing. That was really cool.
Yeah.
So I caught the last 8 minutes.
Worth it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's also like just so much fun to like, when you have so much respect for an artist and then be able to be really close to them, it's this feeling of even being even closer, or that she isn't this anonymous person. I mean, she's like she's an actual human. Yeah, yeah, I think that that's, again, something I also admire in her, and her is just sort of this honesty about herself and her lyrics, how she holds herself in interviews. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm not wrong, but...
No, she seems like a genuine
person. Exactly. I also thought you went to go see the Amazon Prime concert in New York City.
I did. I went with Sophia.
Yeah, okay. Sophia seems to be your hookup.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, we went to that concert and it was really fun. But I also love going to New York because the food there is so good.
Are there any questions that I'm forgetting to ask you or thoughts that you wanted to share about her? Either, just your relationship with her. Because I feel like a lot of this, I was talking about my relationship and you're just in agreement.
Oh.
Yeah.
I would love to meet her one day. It's going to happen. I just
don't know. What would you even ask her? What would you do?
Ooh, I think I'd
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, I would probably too.
Be like, actually, when I was in New York last summer, I went to the Dominique Ansel Bakery, and he was there. And I actually didn't even know what he looked like, but I went in to grab napkins or something, and then saw his cookbook sitting on the table. And I was like, oh, that, I guess that's what he looks like. So then I go back to the table to eat, and I see this guy, and I'm like, oh, he looks familiar. Oh, it's him! Looks familiar because I just saw his face on a cookbook. Yeah. So I was like, Joseph, look! So then I took some creepy pictures of him in the background. And then we asked and we got a picture with him.
Wow, yeah. So...
That has nothing to do with
him. But celebrity did.
But yeah, no, I guess I froze.
Yeah. So you would just like ask for a picture from Taylor? There, like if you could actually, if you could collect your cool and like actually ask her a question.
A question? Or, you know. I'd probably just tell her that she's been, I guess, in my life since we were 14. I don't know. I think she's played a big role in my life. Go back, listen to her songs if I'm going through something bad or good, or if I just want something to listen to.
Just all the time.
All the time, every opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm sure. And she knows it. Yeah, I guess maybe my parting words about it is that if you've written her off in some fashion or another for a reason or another, yeah, just maybe revisit one of her songs, maybe any of the ones that we've mentioned on this episode, and sit down with the lyrics and really focus on those first and then see how the music influences that. And if it's still not your cup of tea, then that's also totally fine.
Totally fine.
All right. Well, Michelle, can I ask you two final questions? Sure. What is one piece of advice you would tell your younger self about entering and pursuing a music career?
It's not going to be easy. And you better be ready to work, and maybe you should pursue something.
Okay. No, but it's true. I mean, right? You have to know what you're signing up for. Although it's like one of those things where I thought I knew what I was signing up for, and then it changed. Mm-hmm. Or what I thought, the perception was different than what ended up being my reality of some sort. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's solid advice. And I guess in vain with that, just make sure to ask around before you go through it. Ask questions.
I mean, you don't do it for the money because...
I mean, you can make a good, decent living. A respectable living.
You can, but you're not going to be like Elon Musk.
You're not selling your soul to go on a spaceship anywhere.
We're not going to Mars anytime soon.
No. All right. And as we enter a ever-changing post-pandemic world, what elements of your musical pandemic life would you want to continue and what would you want to shed?
I would like to continue performing. What do I want to shed? Honestly, I kind of like playing concerts with a mask.
Oh.
I think I make a lot of faces. And you can hide them. No one has
to see
that.
I have a very similar feeling myself, too. I kind of don't mind them. I mean, sometimes the mask restricts a bit of my ability to breathe a couple times, like if I'm really worked up. But yeah, I feel similarly. I'm kind of glad that there's a mask so no one can see my double chins or anything like that.
Well, I did take a big break from the violin. At first, when the pandemic hit, it was like, oh, we'll be back
a month.
Six
or whatever.
Months,
yeah.
Or 2.5 months, whatever. And I was like, sweet, I'm going to work really hard, learn a new concerto, and perfect all the standard excerpts. And then once it was starting to look like it was going to last a lot longer, I was like, well, I'll just use this as an opportunity to take a break.
Yeah.
And then drove all over the country to see things that I never had seen before, like the Grand Canyon and Arches National Park. I spent some time in the Bay Area, your old stomping grounds.
Your sister's stomping grounds.
Beautiful out there. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I did enjoy the time.
Okay. But you would want to go back and practice is also what I'm hearing.
Yeah. I mean, I have.
Because you're saying it was like something that you would want to shed is not practicing.
Oh, I would like to shed the hiatus that I took.
Okay. Okay,
I guess.
Sure.
I mean, I am practicing now.
Right. So you're already doing it.
It was actually kind of hard coming back to it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm tired after playing.
That's
no, that's not good.
Okay. Are there any platforms or websites for listeners to learn more about you or any upcoming projects?
Probably just the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra website. That's not mine.
I know, but you're a part of the symphony.
It's www.indianapolissymphony.org.
Oh, that's very simple. And if you enjoyed listening, be sure to smash that subscribe button wherever you're tuning into this podcast. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts while you're at it. It doesn't need to be long. Your review will help others search for the podcast because of its crazy algorithms, and you'll make Sushi's day. And it's free. Make sure to share this podcast with your friends and family as well. If you want to level up, you can always become become part of the Hidden Behind the Music Stand family by donating what you will on our Patreon page at patreon.com/hidenmusicstand. Our social media handle for Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter is @hidenmusicstand, and we'd love to hear from you at our email, hidenmusicstand@gmail.com. Didn't recognize the piece we discussed during the episode? No worries. There's a Spotify playlist with all the music discussed for your convenience. The link is in the description of each episode. Michelle, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. Of course, it's always a pleasure to see and talk to you, and I look forward to our friendship continuing forth for the remainder of our lives together.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
And thanks for listening. Say bye, Sushi.